Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Welcome back to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Pleasure to have you folks continue to listen to us. Some of you who have been following us for a long time may recall an article I really took on. The New York Times published it a couple years ago. Something in the line of, why can't 20-somethings get their lives together? And there was a lot of rhetoric and good provocative thoughts. Well, I want you to know that our next guest is the complete antithesis. He's really got his stuff together. In fact, he's committed to helping other millennials and as well all of us others who are interested in listening in to get on the right track. So I welcome to the show Aaron McDaniel. How are you this morning, Aaron?
I'm great, Zara. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Let me do a quick introduction. Aaron's a corporate manager, entrepreneur, a serial one at that, author, public speaker, and also community leader. Having held diverse roles at AT&T, Aaron is one of the youngest to serve as a regional vice president. Still in his 20s, as I mentioned, he's a serial entrepreneur and founder of multiple ventures, including Young Professionals Edge, a company focused on empowering young people to succeed in their careers. While an undergraduate at the University of California, Berkeley, Aaron taught a highly rated student-led course on leadership within the business school. In his 5-to-9 life, Aaron is an active community volunteer in San Francisco, which is where he lives. He's an avid international traveler, has visited 33 countries to date. I imagine that's a lot of frequent flyer miles there, Aaron. And he's passionate about giving back. He founded the Jill Wakeman Foundation for Equality, which is a micro-giving venture that was the 75th birthday gift to his grandmother to support, or godmother to support her lifelong quest for equality for all people. Aaron is an author, as I mentioned, and our topic today is going to be his new book called The Young Professional's Guide to the Working World, Savvy Strategies to Get In, Get Ahead, and Rise to the Top. It's actually first in a series to provide key insights relevant to young professionals who are looking to build successful careers, including he provides 25 attributes that all young professionals need to develop. And I will tell you, take note, they're probably 25 for all of us. So, again, congratulations on everything you've done so far, Aaron. And how's everything going with your book so far?
Thanks so much. Things are going great. It's interesting the point you made at the end. While the focus has been on young professionals and those of the millennial generation, I've gotten a lot of feedback from those who aren't in the millennial generation about how a lot of the tips in the books are relevant at different stages of your life.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, though, there couldn't be a better time for this book than now. I feel strongly about that because there's so much out there about, you know, four generations in the workforce and everyone trying to label and pigeonhole folks as opposed to necessarily recognize the breadth of possibility for all of us to step up in new ways.
Well, I think that's right. I see there being, I call it the gap. There's a big gap that exists, and it's more experienced generations. They tend to see these millennials, and they think to themselves, well, we want to retain the top talent. We want to be able to attract them. And so the inclination is, let's adapt work culture for that. And while I'm part of the group that's being adapted for, and I like the red carpet being rolled out for me, a couple things. One, it's slow to happen, especially those who have corporate experience. You know that things don't always happen quickly. And two, the individual is being lost in the shuffle. So instead of saying, let's teach, you know, set expectation, let's teach millennials how to be successful in a work environment, they say, let's just adapt ourselves. And I think that a lot of that is systemic, given that that's what happened in the home. Parents said, we have this new generation of kids, we're going to change our whole lives so the world revolves around them. And it's a big shock for millennials when you get to the work world and the whole world doesn't revolve around you and you don't get everything you want and you don't get recognized just for showing up and you don't get to be the VP after 1 or 2 years.
Well, you know, though, I would have to say, and you and I are a few years apart in age, that, you know, I had every bit of belief that I was going to be a VP at a pretty young age, even though I'm a member of the baby boom generation. But I think you do reflect back on an interesting thought that the family values and how us baby boomers have raised our millennials hasn't been necessarily 100% in the best service to them longer term. So that now, you know, as you say, it's time to wake up. That your studies, your work, your lifelong collection here, as well as the wisdom you infuse in your book from others, is a really a nice base to try to find that right line to finally walk.
Exactly. And I think when I look at my generation and my tendencies, we're very impatient, and a lot of that has to do with technology and this ability to have instant gratification. I mean, if you look at your generation, for example, it's normal to write someone a letter and have it take a week to get there and a week to reply back. Whereas we want things now in seconds or milliseconds, and we're using different platforms to communicate with the same people. You know, I've had a number of occasions where I'll send out a Facebook message to a group of friends for who wants to hang out, and then an email goes out, and then we're texting each other, and someone makes a call to let them know that they're there. And so it's this instant gratification. And then the other piece is this sense of entitlement. And that's that we deserve certain things just for the bare minimum. And I think a lot of that comes with how sensitive we've become to making sure everyone's included and everyone feels like they're part of the team and everyone feels like they've accomplished, even sometimes when they as an individual haven't necessarily done that. And I can't tell you the number of certificates and trophies and ribbons I have just for participating in things as opposed to being the winner and being the best at something.
You know, back to this whole concept, though, of instant gratification or instant results or instant reactions, what we lose for any of us that do that, though, is, A, the time for reflection and really clear thinking about what's the right high-quality response. Am I being true to the commitment I can make by saying yes or no or maybe? But the other piece of it is when I don't hear back, then there might be a natural automatic assumption that you're being excluded, right? As opposed to, no, we're still trying to figure it out.
Right, exactly. And instead of saying, well, let's look at this situation or this obstacle and saying, you know, this is, or not necessarily being included and things like that, and use it as a learning experience and a basis, it becomes something that is, I think, a signal to millennials that, oh, you know, this isn't right for me, I'm going to go find something else. And when you look in the context of a career, there's so many millennials who are like, I need to find my passion, I need to find exactly what I want to do, and I don't want to waste my time otherwise.
Well, but wouldn't
seeing,
you? Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, wouldn't you say, Aaron, though, some of that is set up, they've been set up to think they got to get it perfect and got to get it right the first time. And
well,
so,
I think,
you know, don't
in
you
a lot
see?
Of ways, yeah.
Yeah, I see a lot of the opportunity of the millennials that I've had a chance to work with and coach as they explore different options is they almost get rooted in this fear of not getting it right or perfect, even though there's a lot of experimentation.
I completely agree. And actually, one of the chapters in my book, I literally say, I hope we fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a benefit for failure, especially earlier in your career. And if you don't take those risks, what happens is as time goes on, the stakes get higher. And if you don't have some experience of when you didn't succeed and know what not to do, then any failure later could be even worse.
Yeah, that's right.
In terms of effect on your career. So it's just so important. And really a lot of what I focus on is build the foundation for a successful career. Realize that it's not another four-year cycle that we're used to, right? We're used to 4 years in high school.
Or even tighter than that, it's not a cycle where you can go buy the book, take the class, take the test, then graduate, sell the book. You're absolutely right. Even yes, shorter
exactly.
time frame of semesters, you kind of lose that foothold unless you, of course, start going to night school or do seminars to kind of still provide your, you know, some of those lily pads to step upon. We're speaking with, by the way, Aaron McDaniel. His new book is The Young Professional's Guide to the Working World. Aaron, really hit the brief high points. What makes this book different?
So for this book, I realized when I looked out there that, and when I was looking for my own set of advice, there's a few things. So one, a lot of the books that are written for millennials are written either by someone who's of another generation, sort of studying, looking in, or an entrepreneur who, you know, may have some great advice but doesn't really have corporate experience to say this is how it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have both of those, and I saw an opportunity and almost a duty to share. And the other piece is, The chapters are short, to the point. I've read a number of business books, and sometimes the authors tend to say the same point over and over again, and, you know, 100 pages in, you're like, okay, I got it, let's move on to the next thing. So I trust the reader, I say, here's the point, some good anecdotes, and then move on to the next. There's also some good online integration. So throughout the book I say, go look at this tool or take this assessment or here's a little guide to fill out. And at the same time, I'm also building a community where we can get mentorship and focus on career advice. I think one thing when we look at mentoring, which a lot of people see is really important, and it really is. I don't think we're using it to the best way possible. I think a lot of times when we look at mentoring, we say, you know, who is that one person who's at the top of their game, who is, you know, 20, 30 years older, who knows how they got there? And there's a benefit from having those type of relationships, but I also think there's a benefit from peer mentoring.
Oh, profoundly important. You're absolutely right.
And I don't think that that's fully utilized.
Mm-hmm. I did. And I think that's the other point, is that your book is about indeed building a community, just not one-to-one in an individualistic interface. Perhaps take us on a quick walking tour, the structure of your book, Aaron, because it is unique in even how you decided to distill all these learnings.
Sure. So in the book, I talk about two archetypes. One is the STAR, which is an acronym for someone who's savvy, tenacious, adaptive, and resourceful, mm-hmm. and who we want to aspire to be. And then the antithesis is the DOPE, which is someone who disses opportunity, potential, and earnings. And the DOPE isn't necessarily someone who's unintelligent. It's just someone who doesn't necessarily take initiative and doesn't actually get out there and take ownership of their career.
And part they may not know how to, right? I mean, you're not being judgmental at all. I noticed in the use of the book that they just may not be informed of the ways of the world this day and age.
Well, that's one of the points I make on basically page one. I say school does not teach you how to be successful in a working environment. And moreover, a lot of my peers, they come from backgrounds where their parents are immigrants coming from other countries and don't necessarily have the type of jobs that we've aspired to get through our education. And so you don't really get it anywhere, not at home, not through school. So there really is no idea, exactly.
I think the other thing you'd probably rely upon if you looked at traditional mentorship or people we've relied on in the past is, hey, the whole definition of what a job looks like is totally different in this day and age. I mean, probably three-fourths of the categories and roles and responsibilities didn't even exist but for 5 years ago.
That's right. That's right. It's all brand new. So, and throughout the book, we talk about those two archetypes, and then I talk about this analogy of building a house. Mm-hmm. And some of the 25 attributes are foundational, so more key characteristic traits that you need to build. Then the next are more structural, which is not necessarily what you do, but how you do it. And then the final set is more exterior. So it's not necessarily what you do or how you do it, but how others perceive you. Things like integrity, things like communication skills. And so they all kind of come together and build what essentially is what you're building is almost, your career is almost like a house, and it's a structure that has so many important elements.
That's right. That, oh, by the way, needs constant remodeling depending on the time and the age and, you know, the context of where you've chosen to deploy your interest to.
That's right.
The fact, Aaron, I wanted to just quickly reflect back on, of course, the introduction I gave for you is that, you know, you've chosen to, at a very young age, build a portfolio career that includes the corporate commercial world, as we mentioned, but also your work in philanthropy and establishing a not-for-profit and giving back or giving forward even. And that kind of breadth, I believe, I commend you for that, because that's given you really different vantage points to understand a lot of the strengths, I feel, of the millennial generation, particularly your generation's passion and commitment of wanting to do no kidding high-impact things, whether that be in the community or on the job.
That's exactly right. And one of the exterior attributes that I talk about is actually giving back, and I think that's important. And besides the actual help that we give to the causes we're passionate about, one cause I'm passionate about, for example, is education. Besides that, there's actually an inherent benefit that you get, because in a lot of these roles where you're helping others and giving back, there's a form of teaching that you're doing. And I think that teaching is one of the best ways to learn. And if you look at actually what you mentioned at the beginning introducing me, one of the opportunities I had was to teach a student-led course at UC Berkeley on leadership. And the fact that I had to teach this to, you know, a set of students every semester made me really understand and internalize a lot of the messages around effective leadership.
Well, and in fact, any professional who particularly is striving to become an expert in a topic or a function, not until you teach it do you really understand what you don't know. And then likewise, of course, the power of what you learn for your students constantly feeds your own self-growth.
That's absolutely right. Exactly.
So tell me, the reaction you've gotten to your book so far, again, we're speaking with Aaron McDaniel, the book is The Young Professional's Guide to the Working World. Did you go and pilot it or test drive it with a group of millennials or maybe on the flip side, a group of traditionalists or baby boomers before you kind of, you know, let the ink finally settle in?
No, you know, it was an idea that I toyed with quite a bit, and I guess in some respects I trusted my gut little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And because of some of the experiences I've had, I felt like I was in a good position because not only had I been a millennial myself, I also had an opportunity through different positions to manage millennials as well as manage those who are even twice my age. And so being able to sort of understand how different generations view each other and some of the benefits and some of the mistakes I've seen other peers of mine make, I saw it an opportunity. But the thing that was interesting is some of the little things that I sort of put in, you know, almost as an afterthought that really struck with people. Like one of the things I talk about toward the beginning of my book are a set of myths that I had assumed coming into the working world, as well as a set of truths that were a little hard to swallow.
Why don't you cover a couple of those myths just to share with our listeners the breadth of what you've done here?
Sure. So I think that, you know, one of the myths is that you'll get a raise every day.
Every year.
And that, you know, the better you do, you know, the better people will treat you. And there have been times, and this is a little hard to swallow, where I put out great work, great results, but sometimes other things like politics and just circumstance so that I didn't necessarily get what I felt I was entitled to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of other things like that were interesting truths to swallow about the fact that oftentimes you don't have control over your own career, especially as you move up in a company, especially large companies. Oftentimes, others come to you with opportunities, and it's kind of your duty to say yes and follow their orders. So it's not necessarily always something you have control over. And another one that was interesting that I had found, but a lot of people actually took away as an interesting point, is the fact that your boss cares more about their career than yours. And I think oftentimes we're in positions where we're used to teachers and people who are supporting us and helping us along the way, but that's not always the case. And when it comes down to brass tacks, so to speak, your boss is more concerned with feeding his or her family and their well-being than you.
And if I might add, though, most of the time, okay? Don't take that as an absolute truth, because there will be times in your career where you will encounter the boss that realizes to best serve his career, it's to focus on those with whom he is left, you know, is really getting the work done through and with. So
you're absolutely right. And I'm writing my second book in the series, which is on managing. And that's one of the biggest points, is making it about your team and making it about your employees. And I have been very lucky in my career to have been working for a series of bosses who have been absolutely fantastic, who've given me freedom to be able to develop and drive results and innovate, but also supporting me so I can help grow. So I could not, you know, agree with you more. And oftentimes when I'm talking to young professionals in universities, that's one of the things I point out is, besides you as an individual, the most important person in your career is whoever your boss is at any given time.
Well, and
not only because of your pocketbook, but also because they're the one who's going to support you for future opportunities.
You bet. Now, you mentioned that as you came up with your myths and truths, that some of them percolated as a result of your managing millennials as well as managing those who are older than you, and that also the mistakes that you made along the way. Any one particular that you'd like to, you know, think through and talk through with us that really struck home to you and really shaped, you know, how you were thinking further about managing this different diversity of people?
Absolutely. So I think that the biggest lesson I learned in my career is the fact that when you make things about the team as opposed to yourself, that's when good things happen. And there was an experience I had. I was at an internship, actually, at a pot sticker company.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a fellow intern who was a year older than me, very, very sharp girl. And for some reason, I had this thought in me that I had to prove that I was better than her, that I was number one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up doing a few things that I wasn't proud of. You know, there were times when I was supposed to have passed along a message to her and I didn't, you know, in an effort to have an opportunity to make her look bad and me look good. And when the veil was lifted, when the curtain was lifted and they saw what happened with me and my intentions, it didn't really bode well. But after that, I really decided to change. And I found that when I aligned my goals with those of my boss, when I looked for ways to make him or her look good and mitigate their weaknesses, that's when I got higher raises, that's when I got bigger bonuses, and that's when I got supported for promotion, because those are the types of people that leaders want on their team.
And in fact, another way I might phrase that, if you don't mind, is that as much as we teach in business schools and in coaching other individuals a lot about how to be a better supervisor of those below you, as well as the politics, the priorities, how to manage up, that actually the things that really differentiates high potential people is how they manage across the organization and how they're viewed as indeed supporting the experience of their peers just as much as up and down. So you earned it early, and I think for myself personally, I reflect on my 30-plus years in career, it's like, man, I wish I'd learned that one earlier.
And that's interesting. When I look at a lot of the feedback I've got, the reviews I've received on Amazon, there are a number of them that have said, I wish I had this 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Again, for our listeners, we're speaking with Aaron McDaniel, and his book is The Young Professional's Guide to the Working World. You can also learn about Aaron's effort on his site, www.ypedge. That stands for youngprofessionalsedge.com. So right now the book's been out. I know you've gotten a lot of really great press and reaction, and you've used it as part of your speaker's document, shall we say, when you reach out there and touch people. Any "whoa, I wasn't expecting that" type responses to the book so far?
I think for the most part everything's been pretty positive. As I mentioned, I wasn't expecting anyone outside of the millennial generation to have read this and thought this is a great tool and great advice. But I've really been encouraged at that fact. I was actually at a book signing, and a woman in her 70s actually was in the Q&A portion was saying she found a lot of use to some of the lessons I talked about. So I thought it was very interesting, just the expanse and impact for other generations as well.
So, Aaron, you're in your 20s. You've done some really incredible things from a corporate standpoint. I also was really intrigued and enjoyed visiting the Jill Wakeman Foundation for Equality site about the idea of a cup of coffee and a micro contribution to what Jill lives here day in, day out, of helping those that are disadvantaged. The whole idea of starting something up in the philanthropy world must have brought to you some new experiences as well.
It was such a great experience. As you referenced, my godmother, who's like a second mom to me, she didn't have any kids of her own, and she's been passionate about equality for 50, 60, 70 years, as long as she's been around, her whole life. And so everything from the civil rights movement to fair and equal housing and everything in between. And so as a gift to her for her 75th birthday, I created this foundation as a way to have it live on. And I didn't want it to be something that was more of a memorial to her after she passed away.
Right.
Me thinking this is what she might have wanted, but having her have an involvement in the foundation of it so that it was actually something that was exactly what she wanted it to be. And so much encouragement I've received from people. We got some good press for that as well. The campaign, we call it Cups for Equality.
Right.
And it's this idea around the fact that, I mean, we spend, $3 or $4 a day on buying a cup of coffee, and what if we took just one day's worth of coffee and donated it to a cause? Millions of cups of coffee are bought every single day, and so it would be great to be able to take that and help others. And while we've come a long way with equality, there's still a good amount of inequality that we still find this day and age, and that's what that foundation aspires to help support.
Well, great. Aaron, one last question. Again, young in your life, but I know you've had a lot of impact on people. Let me ask, though, how do you think you've changed by helping other people change?
I think in the process of looking at what would make a young professional successful, you had to be very introspective, mm-hmm. and I had to look and say, well, what is it that made me successful? And so some of the times you think of specific instances and this is a thing you accomplished, but ultimately it's a lot of these characteristics that I talk about here. and realizing that you don't need to have the fancy title and the nice corner office mm-hmm. or a bunch of direct reports to be a leader. You can be a leader in any situation that you're in. And I think just understanding, you know, your strengths and your weaknesses and a number of these other attributes can go a long way in helping you become the leader that you already are. And then that affording you other opportunities when people take notice of the great worker and person that you are.
That's a very well put. Well, thank you very much for that. Again, my guest has been Aaron McDaniel, the Young Professionals Guide to the Working World, www.ypedge.com. And Aaron, we're going to look forward to having you on the show again real soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Doc.
You bet. Talk to you soon.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.